Hello and welcome to Diary of a Common Man. My name is Salim Lalani and thank you for joining me once again. It's a cold and wet afternoon in Sydney and nothing like a cup of hot tea on a day like this. According to YouTube stats, Diary of a Common Man is being watched by 97 countries around the world. Out of those 97 countries, 15 are Islamic states. And out of those 15 Islamic states, only one decided to ban my videos. And the country is a country that I love. That is where the love of my life comes from, Pakistan. But why would Pakistan want to suppress my voice? Why would Pakistan worry about videos of a very common man, unknown and very powerless? Why? Did I make any derogatory remarks about Pakistan? Everyone knows my videos are not about Pakistan. They are about becoming aware of the other side of Aga Khan. This means Pakistan's reaction is based on my commentary on the other side of Aga Khan. But why is Pakistan so sensitive about Aga Khan? 14 Islamic countries had no problems. Why only Pakistan? I'm pretty sure my audience knows why. Question is, who initiated the ban? Did someone in Pakistani government watch my video and took them down because they love Aga Khan? Or do you think Aga Khan and his system got into their ears? And if they did, it would be a sad day. It is a common knowledge that Aga Khan is a big advocate of ethics and pluralism and all that kind of stuff. How would denying someone a human right, human basic right of a human being to speak freely, how would that go down with his ethics and pluralism advocacy? But whoever has initiated this ban must understand two things. Whenever you ban something or somebody, it only arouses human curiosity. And it is no wonder I'm getting so many messages from Pakistanis requesting my work. To them, I would say, please give me some time. I am actually working on it as we speak. Number two, this ban is damaging to Aga Khan and his system. Because there is an attempt to suppress somebody's voice. Aga Khan may be completely innocent of this, but remember, it is all about him and it will reflect on him and the Pakistani people for allowing this to happen. So to conclude, I welcome the ban because it works for me. Ball is now in Aga Khan's court. My viewers will remember a couple of weeks ago, Imamat institution accused me of spreading animosity in the community. Upon challenging them to substantiate that accusation, they went underground. I wish to advise my audience, they are still there. I have received a couple of calls and an email from Aga Khanis that I am inciting violence against Ismailis. I have actually blocked these viewers before they spread this nasty thought. But I will not walk away from this issue and I will address it right now. When I asked this caller, what did I do to incite violence? And he said I was wrongly accusing Aga Khan of claiming divinity. And the Muslim community is very sensitive about this issue. Now, I heard his complaint, but when I justified my comments on divinity, I found the caller became deaf. Now, I need Aga Khanis to understand that this dangerous situation for them has not been created by Salim Lalani. Let us become very, very clear about what is offending the Muslim community. It is Aga Khan's divinity behind closed doors. This is unforgivable in Islam. Does Salim claim to be God? Or is it Aga Khan that claims to be God? It is Aga Khan who promotes Ginan's claiming his divinity, not Salim. What Salim is doing is making Aga Khan is aware that this is insulting Islam, and as a result, they could find themselves in trouble. Aga Khanis must appeal Aga Khan to stop the God nonsense. It is as simple as that. But here's a problem. Aga Khanis are not allowed to speak. If anyone dares, guess what? Now, Aga Khanis don't have a voice against their imam. Who puts them in this precarious situation? So who do they blame? Me. And if Aga Khan and Aga Khanis expect me to brush this issue under the carpet, that is not happening. I'm now beginning to receive messages from Bora community. Apparently they have similar issues. In fact, I have recently spoken to a Bora reformist, and they have expressed their willingness to support my campaign in any way they can. So a big thank you to Bora reformists. Good news is that since episode 8 was aired, unreasonable and abusive comments have dramatically reduced. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. Even better news is messages of support have increased, particularly coming from Aga Khanis themselves. These Aga Khanis, a very small minority, have contacted me, and basically what they are saying is they want to stay with the Aga Khani system. And there's nothing wrong with that. I've never encouraged anybody to leave the Aga Khani system. But what these people want is they want reform. They don't want to continue the way it is. Now, what reform do they want? I don't know. Not very clear at this point in time. But I will keep you posted when I have concrete information. It is now more than 50 years. I don't remember the year or the date, but I remember vividly it was Karimabad Jamaat Khana in Mumbai. The atmosphere was nothing short of electric. Thousands of murids had gathered for a didar, that is, just one glimpse of the Lord, the master, Hazar Imam Shah Karim Aga Khan IV. Myself, a little boy of roughly about 10 years of age, or even a little bit younger, part of the congregation, I had been sitting there waiting patiently with my father on one side and the brother on the other side. For hours, we sat there, and I didn't have any idea what was the fuss about. However, looking around, I do remember tears rolling down every other cheek, aroma of incense in the hall, and a chorus of ginans introducing Shah Karim as God. God that they were about to meet physically. After what seemed like an eternity, we heard the siren of a police motorcade, announcing the arrival of the Lord. Time stopped and hearts began thumping. And within few minutes, a figure dressed in angel white entered the hall. And the sunlight peeping through the building window only added to the glow. A chorus, many thousands strong, was now reciting this alwat in low volume. The Lord walked over the red carpet at a snail's pace, allowing a close physical encounter, as close as possible, between him and the murid or the follower. Finally, the carpet led him to a chair on the stage, which looked more like a throne. He settled into it with officials kneeling on either side of his chair for instructions. And I couldn't take my eyes off his white shoes matching the white gear. He wore the shoes exactly where they recite the Quran in their prayers. Someone then came forward to sing a ginan, expressing the identity of the Lord Shah Karim as divine and all of us sitting in the hall as sinners. Then the Lord stood up to address the spiritual children. His address in Ismaili terminology is called a farman, or a holy guidance. A typical farman starts with the showering of the blessings, followed by some advice on spiritual and worldly matters. This is followed by assurances from the Imam that he loves his spiritual children more than they love him. Assurances that upon his departure from Jamaat Khana, he will still be present spiritually, and finally concludes with more blessings. Once the farman was over, someone translated the farman in local vernacular, as most murids in those days didn't understand English, and the Lord was unable to speak the Indian local language. This was followed by a few ceremonies, then he was gone within minutes. His departure, however, opened emotional floodgates. I remember very, very clearly the people crying openly, embracing each other, congratulating each other, and why wouldn't they? After all their sins had been forgiven, and they had received spiritual bounties that they could hardly handle. Shah Karim Al Husseini, 49th Shia Ismaili Nizari Imam. His followers address him as Murshid, Yali Bapa, Hazar Imam, Khudabind, etc. But to his friends, he is K for Karim, whereas in royal circles, he is known as His Highness. Aga Khan was born on 13th of December 1936 to Prince Ali Khan and his mother Joanne Guinness, who was renamed Tajuddola, in Geneva, Switzerland. He spent early childhood in Kenya and went to a boarding school in Switzerland. As a young man, he went to Harvard to study arts, majoring in history. Whilst he was still studying, in 1957, his grandfather Aga Khan III nominated him as the next Aga Khan and the 49th Imam of Shia Nizari Ismailis. In 1969, Aga Khan married Sally Crockerpool, a model. She was renamed Begum Salima. They had three children, Princess Zahra, Prince Rahim, and Prince Hussein. But then, after almost two decades, Begum accused Aga Khan of having extramarital affairs. A few names surfaced: Italian beauty Milena Mafi, Austrian Pilar Goes, who was a nude model. She posed for men's magazine Playboy, and Egyptian beauty Ariane Soldati. Begum Salima filed for a divorce, which was granted. She walked away with £20 million and jewellery worth £17.5 million. After the divorce, Aga Khan married a lawyer, a pop singer, Gabrielle Zu Leningen. New bride was younger than Aga Khan's son, Prince Rahim. She was renamed Begum Inara. But 6 years into the marriage, the Begum sought divorce. But why? What was her problem? Her problem was the same as Begum Salima: extramarital affair. They say Begum Inara hired private detectives to prove that the spiritual father of Nizari Ismailis was actually having an affair with an extramarital affair, that is, with an air hostess. Once she had enough evidence, she filed for divorce in UK, but Aga Khan managed to get it transferred to France because French courts are known to grant low settlement amounts. The case dragged on for 10 years. Eventually, the court found Aga Khan guilty of adultery charges. The Begum was awarded a whopping £54 million. This case broke all French records. Aga Khan is now 85 years of age and he still has a companion, Countess Beatrice von der Schulenburg. I regularly receive messages from Aga Khanis who maintain Aga Khan is an imam, not God, and they are very frustrated that I am not getting it, that he is an imam, he is not a god. And they further maintain that Aga Khan has never said he is God. And the irony of the situation is they call me ignorant when they seem to know very, very little, if they know anything, about their own faith. So in this episode, I wish to take them inside the Jamaat Khana, inside their own faith, in the hope that they will open their eyes and look around. Life magazine, December 1983, it introduces Aga Khan as, it says, to 15 million followers, to 15 million Muslim followers rather, in 25 countries, he is a living God, direct descendant of Prophet Muhammad and the spokesman of Almighty Allah. That's what Life magazine says. But in the ensuing issue of Life magazine, February 1984, on page 15 appears a letter from Aga Khan headquarters reprimanding Life magazine. And Aga Khan says, and I quote, "Aga Khan is the 49th hereditary imam, spiritual leader of the Shia Imami Ismaili Muslims. The unity of Allah, that is Tawheed, is one of the fundamental principles of Islam. For Life magazine to assert that Aga Khan is a living God and spokesman for Allah is a total misinterpretation of the most basic tenet of the world's major faiths and a serious affront to all Muslims." Wow, that's what Aga Khan says. And these are pretty heavy words for Life magazine. How dare you call me God and a spokesman of Allah? Get it right. I am not God, I am a Shia imam. But wait, I have a question or two. Who approves the Ginans that depict him as God? Is it Aga Khan? Who encourages Ginans recitations in Jamaat Khana by promoting it as wonderful tradition? Is it Aga Khan? Who approves religious discourses that promote him as God? Is it Aga Khan? Who runs institutions that indoctrinate little children and adults alike with the idea that he is God? Is it Aga Khan? Who oversees a system that has crafted rituals depicting him as God? Is it Aga Khan? In this episode, we will learn how, on one hand, Aga Khan reprimands Life for calling him a living God, and behind closed doors, everything that he can possibly do to promote himself as God, he does it. Every Muslim, irrespective of what branch or ideology of Islam they belong to, they are all bound by one common testimony, which is called a shahada. Ashhadan la ilaha illallah wa ashhadan Muhammadur Rasulullah, meaning I testify that there is no God but God, and I testify that Muhammad is the messenger of God. If my reader should read the Quran, they will become impressed with the idea that God can tolerate almost anything, but he does not tolerate someone comparing him with anything or anybody. Hence, if one is not willing to accept that God is only one and there is no God besides God, one cannot be a Muslim. This acceptance is called a shahada, and its expression is called a kalima. That is, you speak something is called kalima. And as I said, all Muslims recite Ashhadan la ilaha illallah wa ashhadan Muhammadur Rasulullah. But Shia Muslims add one more testimony. They add Wa Ali waliyun Allah, meaning Ali, Mawla Ali, the first Imam of Shias. They say Ali is a friend of Allah. Now remember, Aga Khan is Ali. So what he does is he adds Ashwatan Aliun Amirul Mominin Aliullah, meaning I testify that Ali is a leader of believers and he is either Allah or is from Allah. Now, I know this is complex, but it is important to understand how stealth is being used here. And bear with me, I'll explain. In this testimony, the key word is Aliullah. What is Aliullah? Either it can mean Ali is from Allah, or it can mean Ali is Allah. One thing is for sure, whatever it means, one thing is for sure, is not clear. And that is clear. It is ambiguous. Now, if you accept the meaning as Ali is from Allah, everything is fine. But if you interpret it as Ali is Allah, then the basic principle of Tawheed is violated. The Tawheed for which Aga Khan reprimanded Life magazine. Now, what does Aga Khanis mean when they declare the word Aliullah? Do they mean to say Ali is from Allah, or do they mean to say Ali is Allah? I present a few examples of Aga Khani practices in the hope that it will clarify what do they mean. One of them is confession of sins or dua karavi. In this ritual, basically the very first time the follower enters Jamaat Khana, he basically approaches the mukhi, who is the leader of the representative of the imam. He hands him some money, folds his hands and verbally confesses that he is a sinner from top to toe, and he actually seeks Aga Khan's forgiveness for his sins. Now, in Islam, who is authorized to forgive sins? Is it Mawla Ali? Is it any peer or fakir? Or is it the Prophet? The answer is no one except Allah. Now, Aga Khan is the forgiver of sins according to this Dua Karavi ritual. Mukhi says, may Aga Khan forgive your sins. What does that make him? Then, the Aga Khani actually becomes part of the congregation once his sins are forgiven, and soon someone recites a ginan and they say, Eji Al Ali Islam Shah Raja Allah Yehi Imam. Allah God is Imam. Imam is Aga Khan. Next week, we will continue discussing Aga Khan's divinity in the rituals, in the ceremonies, in the discourses, in the ginans, to clarify as to how Aga Khan is God inside Jamaat Khana and in how many different ways. Until then, take care of yourself. Goodbye.